This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 40 years ago, four guys in Los Angeles created a 40s-style radio detective with a twist.
Los Angeles. He walks again by night. Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly. Ruthlessly.
I wonder where Ruth is.
Doggedly. Toward his weekly meeting with the unknown. At 4th and Drucker, he turns left. At Drucker and 4th, he turns right. He crosses MacArthur Park and walks into a great sandstone building.
Oh, my nose!
Groping for the door, he steps inside. Climbs the 13 steps to his office. He walks in. He's ready for mystery. He's ready for excitement. He's ready for anything. He's...
Nick Danger, Third Eye.
I want to order a pizza to go and no anchovies.
No anchovies? You've got the wrong man. I spell my name, Danger.
In honor of Nick Danger's 40th birthday, his creators reunite here on Talk of the Nation and on stage in Hollywood with a show they call Forward into the Past, inspired by the likes of Stan Freberg and The Goon Show on the BBC. The Fire Sign Theater started on radio in Los Angeles in the 1960s and produced a series of records that have become cult classics. Nick Danger debuted on How Can You Be in Two Places at Once When You're Not Anywhere at All, which is perfect because Phil Austin, Peter Bergman, and Phil Proctor join us from NPR West in Culver City, California. And just to make trouble, David Osman is in Seattle at the studios of member station KUOW2, and welcome to you all.
Thank you, Neil.
Hi, Neil. Good to hear your voice. I hear a lot.
Nice to hear yours. If you'd like to talk with the members of the Fire Sign Theater about Nick Danger in particular or radio comedy in general, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website that's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, an infectious disease expert advises those skittish about the N1H1 vaccine that all we have to fear is the flu itself. And
excuse me. I'm terribly sorry.
That's quite all right.
I am an expert, swine. Though.
Well, as long as we're talking about swine, tell us a little bit about the origin of Nick Danger.
The origin of Nick Danger is obscure, but 80% of economists say that basically he's recovering, which means that somehow, somewhere, he will be awarded a Nobel Prize fairly quickly.
Fairly quickly, and I, of course...
Not if I can help it.
Let me introduce Rocky Rococo, as played by Mr. Philip Proctor.
You don't need to introduce me. I don't need no introduction. Not from you, anyway.
You stupid idiot. The origins, Peter, what do you think the origins are?
This is Lieutenant Bradshaw. You know what? I'll never get the Nobel Prize because I always wear a belt. I'm a fashion kind of cop.
We need somebody intelligent. David, are you there in Seattle?
Yes, I am,
Mr.
Phil.
David, what the heck do you think the origins of this stupid piece of material are?
It was a great big funny radio show that we were trying to write, that we were going to do in that big sandstone building at the other side of MacArthur Park that we walked into but never walked out of, because we were fired before we even did the show.
Wait a minute.
It's radio. It's radio. You know, Neil, it's radio. You get fired. You get all ready to do a show, and then you get fired.
That hardly ever happens at NPR,
does it? Not at NPR.
They're the same people. Absolutely. So we pulled this Nick Danger piece that we really loved. It was a tribute to old-time radio. We pulled it out and put it on the other side of How Can You Be in Two Places at Once, which was a whole kind of concept album. And that's how it popped up in 40 years ago.
And remember when things had sides, Neil.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, two sides, in fact. A and B. Was he the B side?
He was the through the hole in the middle. Yeah, I guess you could call it the B.
There used to be two sides to every question, unlike today where there's only one side and the other side says, no, just fail. Just fail. You know, one of the things we did on that album, which drove people crazy amongst other stuff, is that Nick Danger, okay, he's all of a sudden he said, which side of the album am I on? And then he takes the needle and goes through exactly where he is on the other side. It's strange.
Yeah, which is then played
backwards,
because it is on the opposite side, of course.
Entertainment used to be a lot deeper and
deeper
more intelligent than it is today.
Yeah. And did it say Paul is dead if you played it backwards?
It said Nick is alive and waiting for the future. Wait, and could we plug our show?
Go ahead and plug your show.
From the 14th through the 17th in Los Angeles, right in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard itself at the Barnesdale Gallery Theater.
High above Hollywood Boulevard. Mm-hmm.
Go to firesigntheater.com for tickets.
And for those of us who are not as familiar with your voices as I am, would you just identify yourselves every once in a while when you're talking so we can keep you straight?
This is George Tirebiter. I've been in radio since 1941, and I have a lot to say about it, but not in this old man's voice. I'll be back, boy. Don't worry about it.
This is Peter Bergman's voice. I suppose it can be defined from the others, lifted apart. I don't know. We've been together for 43 years. My mother used to call me Phil whenever Phil Proctor and I showed up in the house.
Yeah, and I'm Phil Proctor, and my mother has called me Peter.
There you go.
You see? If Phil Austin was with me, it didn't make any difference.
I was born actually with a virgin birth, so I had no actual mother. This is Phil Austin speaking.
Right. Very modest fellow, too, yes. Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking with the Firesign Theater, Phil Austin, Peter Bergman, Phil Proctor, and David Osman, and all of their associated characters. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Karen is on the line from Columbia, South Carolina.
Somewhere in another state, there is probably an outstanding warrant in the name of Betty Jo Bielowski.
Yes.
I used that name when a highway patrolman wanted to ask me some questions.
Oh. Well, that's the second good use of the name Betty Jo Bielowski.
I was terrified of giving my real name. He didn't ask for my license, thank God.
Karen, did you give him a straight answer?
I was as straight as I could be at the time.
Is this Audrey Farber?
The first name that popped into my mind other than my own was Betty, and she saved me.
Well, you know, the name Bielowski, we use that because there was a kid in high school, Jimmy Bielowski, who pushed me into the pool and nearly drowned me. So that was my way of getting back. So you're all part of that history now.
Thank you, guys. You saved my life in tight circumstances many times.
Karen,
thank you.
Thanks very much.
Betty Jo.
Here's an email from Paul in Jacksonville. Whatever happened to the missing neutrino? Did you ever find it?
We found the missing old Trino.
Yeah, in a cup of water.
Yeah.
That's how you detect old Trinos.
Well, he's referring to the time that the fire sign, the four of us spent, like, what was it, 12 months in that salt mine in Ohio waiting for that neutrino to return?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was real meditative.
Yeah, they said it was going to come
meditative.
Back.
It was meditative.
Well, 80% of scientists say it is back. Economists.
Let's get Bill on the line from Troutdale, Oregon.
Let's get Bill.
Marks
on the line.
And Lennon.
Yeah. Hey.
All hail.
I just got to say, it's such an honor to talk to you guys. You guys got me in so much trouble when I was in college. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, really?
How?
Well, in many ways, I was a radio broadcasting student and a drama student at the same time. And you guys
fatal
such
combination.
An,
right. Fatal combination.
Yep. Such an inspiration. A friend of mine and I, we started putting our own radio show together. We started off by, you know, we got to do the sound effects that these guys do. You tipped us off on, you know, some of your shows or some of your bits with how you did it. You know, the cornstarch and the muckalucks and all that kind of stuff. And
so
it was
fame.
Just from that point on, we were just a nothing but troublemakers in that college radio station.
And that young man's name was Steven Spielberg.
Closer than you think. But such an honor. It's so great to hear you guys are back together again. I did run into you guys one time a long time ago at a pizza place down in Southern California where you guys were together just socializing, I guess.
But, working all the big rooms.
Yeah, working all the big rooms.
Another great job. Yeah. Slice it up. Yes, right. You know, the rooms that you play are really pretty terrific. I just met, again, the woman who produced us in. She said, I did your show in Bug Light.
Right.
To think about Bug Light. It's Bridgeport, Connecticut. Which we walked into it. It was entirely yellow. Everything in Bridgeport, Connecticut was yellow, so we called it Bug Light.
But the bugs in the audience were extremely friendly to us.
They were light as they could be under the circumstances.
A lot of them were bugs that couldn't get into Yale and were just, you know, it really radicalized.
Didn't
them.
We once also work in like a parachute? This is Phil Proctor asking.
Yeah, it was a place covered with a parachute, and the lights were a truck.
A truck. Back. That's right. They had a truck in the back, which was lighting our show up. So,
remember when we did
when
the
Go ahead. When we did the movie theater in Sunland, where we performed before Fahrenheit 451, and outside it said, next week, the Marquis Chimps.
Yes. Been there. And we changed in a barbershop down
next
the street.
Door.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do have one thing I have to add, though. I have on an honored place on our mantle is a bottle of something we made as a prop one time for a show down in Santa Barbara, a bottle of Pyramid Patchouli Oil.
Oh.
And it is something I will pass on to my daughter.
Bill, thanks very much, and I'm sure she's
going to... Whether she'll accept it as a
no. Remember you so fondly that's for true. That legacy, yes.
Thank you.
What is the difference? Where you do all these stage programs, stage shows, like you're going to be doing in Hollywood coming up. But nevertheless, these all started out on radio. A big difference is you can have pieces of paper with the words in front of you on radio.
Ah, but guess what? That's what we're doing in our show right
this
now.
This time, yeah.
Yeah. We've done fully produced shows with, you know, flash pots and elaborate sets and costumes and audiences. And this time around, we're setting it in a radio studio setup.
What a bold decision.
It is. It is. And my initial, Phil Proctor's initial choice was I wanted to play all the albums backwards and then we'd discuss all the satanic references. Mm-hmm. But that didn't go over well with the rest of the guys. Yeah. So we're juggling all of these different pieces from our great opus, and we're going to be reinventing them and presenting them in a live, interesting fashion. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you already did an album called Forward Into the Past.
Yeah,
we did. Actually, it was a single, our only single in this is David Osmond, back in 1969. That was 40 years ago, too. And so we kind of are reviving that, you see. But the thing about Nick Danger is, and why the guy who just called really loved it, is that we were exposing the insides of radio, mm-hmm. the stuff that you're not supposed to know about. You're supposed to buy all of these things. And, you know, my character says, I'm looking for my script. Just go on without me, you know.
That's right.
It blew it up. And for people, that was really wonderful to see, oh, they're doing it. What are they using? So, you know, they're using cornstarch. Oh, I can do that.
And listen, here comes a segue.
Yes, we're coming up to a post. We're talking with members of the Firesign Theater back together 40 years after they first debuted. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk at NPR.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guests this hour, Phil Austin, Peter Bergman, Phil Proctor, and David Osman, members of the Firesign Theater celebrating the 40th anniversary of Detective Nick Danger, Third Eye, one of their more popular characters. 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join the conversation, email us, talk at npr.org. There's also a discussion at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And let's see if we can go to Mark. And Mark's calling us from Kansas City.
Hi. Yeah, this is a real thrill to talk to you guys. When I was a law student clerking at Warner Brothers Studios in the 70s, I was sneaking around the recording area. I opened a door and saw a cloud of smoke and thought I heard you guys. Would that have been you guys?
I don't know. That could have been executives taking a smoke break.
That could have been executive smoke.
And did you, I mean, were you loaded when you did some of this wonderful work?
Everybody asked, hi, this is Phil Austin, having to answer this question.
For 5,000
Thank you, Phil, for answering
Why don't you tell him the
time.
Truth this time?
Yeah, here, Phil.
I recently heard a tape that someone had made, that Proctor had turned on a tape machine like 40 years ago or something at one of our writing sessions. And obviously the influence was very, very good and very, very cheap. And as you listen to it, you realize, oh, actually, when we actually wrote the stuff and actually recorded it, we were not in this condition.
No.
We used that condition to actually throw out huge amounts of stuff that would come boiling out of the four of us. It was an interesting
That's
form
true.
Of writing.
Yeah.
You hardly ever get four adult human males that get along with each other that will actually sit down and write together for the amount of time that we have.
Yeah,
it's an interesting process, and being tremendously loaded actually doesn't facilitate it.
No, we were exhaling large streams of consciousness.
Yeah, right.
Out of which occasionally
I must have seen the exhale.
Must have seen the exhale.
You know what we were actually doing at Warner Brothers? We were doing the 8-track mix, the surround mix on, was it Bozo's?
No, that would be Next World, I think.
No. It was Bozo's.
I think we're all Bozo's on this bus.
It was, yeah,
we're well, no, in the 70s, it might have been all the sessions for Next World.
Hmm. Well,
you see, guys, this is what happens when you've been in the business for 40 years.
And the smoke keeps increasing.
Mark, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
There's another part of your writing technique that I don't think people know a lot about, and that is you all work by consensus. If everybody doesn't like it, out it goes.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's absolutely wrong.
I
completely disagree with that.
Wait a minute. If he disagrees, we can't go on.
Let's have a Monty Python-esque argument over it.
which one of us is the richest? He gets the biggest vote. Okay.
Yeah, right.
No. We always, you know, I mean, the point of doing this is David Osman. The point of doing this live stuff together after 42 years, I mean, the first show we did was 1968, for heaven's sake. It's practically vaudeville.
Yeah.
is that we have a good time with one another on stage. That's the goal, and that's what the audience wants to be there to see. And having said that, Phil Austin, where are we going to be?
Where are we going to be? We're going to be at the Barnsdale Gallery Theater. I do sound like a radio announcer, don't I? Everyone's I could get a job doing this.
We're very impressed.
Barnsdale Gallery Theater in Hollywood, California, the 14th through the 17th. That's four fabulous shows. What you do is you go to firesigntheater.com in order to get tickets and information.
That's very good.
Well said.
This is Peter Bergman speaking. One of the reasons I think one of the things I got out of a writing experience in which four people had to agree, generally agree, there were a lot of 3-to-1 arguments that went on forever and ever until we finally found some sort of a compromise, is that it basically was a form of self-medicating. It really was. I felt when I came out of that experience, I felt full of the other three of you, and it was a very good.
That could be a good thing.
Let's get another caller.
But it's really good stuff, Mrs. Preston.
Yeah, this bag is full of good stuff, man.
Michael's with us, calling from Sacramento.
Yeah. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I grew up in L.A. listening to you guys, and I was just kind of thinking about some commercials you did back in the day for Jack Poet VW.
Oh, yeah. I get my car fixed every day at Jack Poet Volkswagen.
but what was the Jack Poet song?
You're a poet in your poet car.
You're a poet in your poet car.
Exactly.
That's right.
Jack is still with us. He lives in Santa Barbara with his lovely wife, Patty. And Jack Poet was a real person, and those were real ads.
That's right. And they are apparently going to be available on our website sometime probably next year. Mm.
Although I think they're on YouTube now. I think you can actually look at
Everything's on YouTube.
Oh, my goodness.
No, if it isn't on YouTube, it's on Pirate Bay or Demonoid. They've got us. They've got us.
But we're going to make comments about that and some other things. Everything You Know Is Wrong, our little film, and Martian Space. Party as well. We're going to be commenting on it.
One of those comments, and this is Phil Austin commenting, might be that the odd long career of the Firesign Theater has been graced by certain lucky breaks. And one of them was that Jack hired us to do those commercials. We were on in the second biggest market in the country for an endless amount of time with these insane, surreal commercials that were absolutely the weirdest things anybody had ever
seen. Some of the best stuff we've ever done.
And it was just one of those odd pieces of luck where for some reason the four of us were allowed to do what we want in front of adults.
I'd like to make – this is Peter Bergman. I want to make one sort of like jump in here. A lot of people feel that from listening to us that it's pretty much sophomoric humor, but we do have a deep side. We did write a parody of William Shakespeare called Anything You Want To, Shakespeare's Lost Comedy. It's deep. It's funny. It's deep. And it's the second half of the second act of the show at Barnsdale this week.
Oh, well, just happened to mention that. Michael, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, Michael.
Colin in Cincinnati emails, The Goon Show was a pivotal influence on radio comedy, British humor in general, among its disciples, John Cleese, Graham Chapman, and others from the legendary Monty Python troupe. How did you come to hear the British broadcast? What influence did it have on your unique style of parody?
David, go.
Yeah, because I can speak
both,
to that.
At KPFK, David, we both had those. Go.
Yes, and at WBAI, even before I came back to the West Coast, at WBAI in its commercial days was on the BBC transcription service, and we would get all kinds of plays and wonderful stuff, and the BBC and the Goon Show would come in. That's the first time I ever heard it, and I immediately became a fan. And ultimately, on KPFK, we did a super documentary about the Goon Show, introducing everybody to all of its many characters, and just going through that because Peter Sellers played about 20 people, mm-hmm. and Spike mm-hmm. Milligan and
Harry Secombe.
Harry Secombe.
Well, he only played one.
He always played himself.
That's yeah, right.
And that's good. That's good too. Everyone else played around him, but very, very educational to us in how to do really surreal radio, to take radio to its farthest edge. That's what the Goons did in London, and that's what we tried to do when we hit the radio in 66, 67. Same kind of thing. Push it.
I had the pleasure of working with Spike in London in 1965. I saw him doing a play called The Blumhoff, which he was going so far off script that they fired him. And I'd gone backstage to congratulate him, and we ended up doing an article for Queen magazine and hanging out a bit. And it's just very funny. He's everything he appears on The Goon Show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Milligan was the chief, Austin speaking, Milligan was the chief writer of, mm-hmm. of The Goon Show and one of the great, great, great comic geniuses of the English-speaking world. Yeah.
Yeah. Helene is on the line. Helene calling us from Quincy in Massachusetts.
Yes, good afternoon. Gentlemen, what an honor to talk to you. It's so good to hear you on the radio again.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I did have a cat named Carolyn Bradshaw Presky.
And she
was a little, we won't talk about it. But I had a question for you, and I appreciate everything you've done over the years and follow your careers collectively and individually. But I was just curious what your take on political humor was these days, because aside from the fact it was just, good backroom fun, you had some serious stuff going on, and that gets appreciated every time. You know, I listen to it, and you know, multiple hearings, you always hear layers and layers of other stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Just curious what your take on current stuff was. And thank you again for all your work.
Thank you, Helene.
On politics, I think, Austin speaking, I think that we faced a situation different than what comedians are facing today. We were in the middle of a war that was being done by draftees. So all around us, the entire country in its own odd way was taking part in that war. And therefore, we were right in the middle of it. The odd thing about these wars that we're in right now is they're being fought by kids and their families who are a very small percentage of the population. And there isn't that feeling of ferment and participation that we were able to glom off of. So I think that when you get good political comedians now, particularly, say, Lewis Black or all the guys involved with the Jon Stewart Show, mm-hmm. they're dealing in a much different style of comedy that I certainly appreciate, but I don't really feel that it has a whole lot to do with what we were doing.
No,
I think 80% of economists would agree with that.
However, they're still trying to beat the Reaper.
That's true. You know, they're just trying to take this healthcare thing and just drown it in lies. I suppose there is a war going on. It's kind of a war on the poor. You know,
A great thing to say.
Yeah, you know, we didn't win the war on poverty. We're still fighting it, but we're fighting it from the other side.
I know the differentiation between the poor and the wealthy in this country is so broad and so deep now that we're not even dealing with the same country we were dealing with 40 years ago.
That's very true.
And we also have something very special, which I think is something that comedians today could take up: the fact that we've just came out of 8 years of a fascist coup. I mean, that's a basis for being funny. You know, let's go from there. A stolen election, a fake war. I think they've got plenty to deal with.
Yeah, das ist richtig. Das misslich.
But then you've got Obama. He's hard to make fun of, you know. A guy gets a Nobel Prize just sitting down and, you know, taking a nap.
Yeah, we'll figure
that's
out
that's hard
something.
To make fun of. Pete, they've been doing it regularly here.
You
know,
did.
There's a problem of access. You have great access, let's say, to the internet, doing things all on your own sort of digitally. But the kind of access that we had in Los Angeles to, 10 million people, I mean, you know, huge radio station coverage, great listenership. We could go on and we knew that we were speaking to an audience who wanted to laugh, who kind of agreed with us. They wanted to go with us. You know, they wanted us to take them somewhere, which is what radio does really well. And the last time that we actually were on the air doing political commentary was on All Things Considered on this very network.
Wow.
And we had a good time doing it, too.
Mm. Here's an email from Ms. Sharon in Williamston, New York. I think it's New York. Michigan, excuse me. Okay. I'm a political campaign consultant, and I've networked my favorite George Tirebiter quote for the back of my business card. You can trust me because I never lie, and I'm always right. If a potential client doesn't laugh at that, I don't work for him.
Ah, now you're talking.
Yes, well, George would completely agree with that sentiment. I appreciate your what kind of... She didn't Twitter me, did she?
No.
God, I loathe being Twittered. It's so painful.
Well, tweeted, however. It's not so
tweeted.
Bad.
Tweeted. Oh, God. Oh, I've got to... Oh, I have to leave the room if I'm going to be tweeted.
Phil Austin, Peter Bergman, like Phil Proctor, and David Osman, the Firesign Theater with us here listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Tim is with us. Tim from Milwaukee.
Hi, Neil.
Go ahead, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Neil, guys. Good to talk to you. I hate to boast here, but some high school friends and I, actually put on what must be the first radio production of Nick Danger back in 1973, or a stage production of the radio show.
Uh-huh.
We faithfully and very painstakingly transcribed the entire side of the album, by playing the record and lifting the arm periodically to scribble down what you folks had just put down or had just spoken. And after weeks and weeks of that, we cobbled together an actual stage show for a small theater festival at our high school back in Michigan.
And what's the statute of limitations on royalty
violations? Yes, our lawyer will be contacting you.
I was really afraid somebody was going to bring that up.
We actually did, this is Phil Proctor, print the scripts to Nick Danger and a
now you
bunch
tell
of
him.
Other. Yeah, right. And a book called the Big Book of Plays. Was that our first one we did?
Big Mystery Joke Book.
Yeah, the Big Mystery Joke Book. That's right.
Did that also include the giant rat of Sumatra, if I remember?
That was the next one.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was the next one.
No.
I do remember stumbling across that book several years later and being immensely frustrated that it had not come out in time for us. But
well, those are the breaks.
How did it go, Tim?
Actually, it was very well received. We had a lot of fun doing it.
Good.
I'm not entirely sure all of the audience bought everything we were doing, but it was good.
Yeah. Tim, thanks very much.
That's the story of our career.
Well, you know, they say the Firesign Theater is never sold out, and I think that's because nobody's buying.
Hey, but this is David. Let me tell all of your listeners that not only is Nick Danger, the original script, available for anybody to perform, all they have to do is get in touch with me, us, them. And for that matter, you could also produce Waiting for the Electrician and Don't Crush That Dwarf. We have scripts for all of these pieces
and a lot
of short, funny pieces. And we're open. Yes, we're open.
We are open.
So get in touch with us if you want to produce the Firesign Theater.
This is Phil. Yes. We're also hoping to release an acting edition of Anything You Want To.
Yeah, that should be coming out next year. Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
Let me just point out that the Firesign Theater will be appearing at the Barnsdale Gallery Theater in Hollywood with a one-of-a-kind show they're calling Forward Into the Past, Wednesday, October 14th through Sunday, October 17th.
Saturday.
Excuse me. Yeah. If I could read, I could get a job in radio. gentlemen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks, Neil.
Phil Austin, Peter Bergman, Phil Proctor with us from NPR West, and David Osman with us from the studios of our member station, KUW2 in Seattle. In honor of Columbus Day, we're going to play an excerpt from a Firesign Theater production about Europeans' first encounter with some Native Americans.
Buenos dias, amigo.
Hello, you must be the true white brother.
Sure, you must be the Indians.
Yes.
Welcome home. Welcome to New Spain. This is your new father, Father Corona.
Down on your knees now. Do you recognize what I'm holding over your heads, lads?
It's a cross, the symbol of the quartering of the universe into active and passive principles.
God have mercy on their heathen souls.
What the father means is, what is the cross made of? Gold. Have you got any?
No.
What about the seven cities of gold? Phoenix, Tucson, Las Vegas?
This is gold.
What's that?
Corn.
Hey, corn! Now we can make tortillas!
We've been waiting for this for hundreds of years.
So this is all you got?
Yes, but... Aren't you the true white brother who's supposed to come and live with us in peace?
Sure. Therefore, I claim this rich verdant and pasture land in the name of the Empire of Spain.
Hey, Capitano, the rain, she's a stop to fall. And the corn, she's all dead.
Shut up, Vespucci. I claim this stinking desert in the name of the Empire of Spain forever. Let's go.
God bless Vespucci land.
Oh, by the way, Domini, you're all Catholics now. God bless you.
Come on, and Father. Nobody in their right minds would live in this stinking desert.
Come on, Cisco.
The Firesign Theater. Coming up, nothing to fear but the flu itself. Our op-ed contributor says fears about the H1N1 vaccine are unfounded. What do you think? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.